Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Hank is still wearing the bikini because he thinks that it's still summer.
Right.
It is not. I have banished the summer.
Okay.
I mean, I know.
He's got to change.
It's August. I know. But
well, he didn't change into his bikini until.
That's true.
Late in the season.
That's true.
So.
Well, I am changing out of my bikini and into my sweatpants. Oh, I'm so over it.
Yeah.
I'm never out in the heat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just stay reclused in my house in the air conditioning every summer, but now I'm having to be in the heat, so.
Yeah. You had to get out there today, huh?
I know. Yeah. But I shouldn't complain because there's a lot of people who are literally out in this heat all the time.
All the time.
Working, yeah. So. Thank you for your service.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good. It was a good work day. I feel like we have so much to catch up on.
I know.
Went to youth camp.
Yeah.
Came back with no injuries.
Great.
No fights with the kids.
Amazing.
Yeah. I would say that's success.
Got a flesh-eating bacteria.
No. Funny you should say that. I got this little spot on my...
Oh, weird.
Yeah. It was right when we got home. It was like a mosquito bite. And then
Now it's like your flesh is...
It looks like a rash, like a tiny little rash, but it doesn't hurt. It doesn't itch. It's really weird.
Maybe you had an allergic reaction to it.
I don't know.
Did you put something on it?
No. Maybe I should.
Interesting.
Anyway, so yeah, there's that. It was good.
Excellent.
I do want to tell you something funny, though.
Go on.
Okay. So.
It's already funny.
No. It's just how God works.
Oh, okay.
And it's one of those things that you're like, oh, you're funny, God. That made me laugh. So as I'm, you probably wonder why I have my Jesus devotional
with
here.
With your toll tag?
No, this is my car tags, my registration that I need to put
on. Toll tag.
Yeah.
Bookmark.
Yeah, exactly. So the other day I was reading, it was talking about being radiant and how when you spend time with God, there's a radiance that comes onto you. So there's scripture that goes along with it. And I'll just, Psalms 34 verse 5. Yeah. It says those who look to God are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. Anyway, so I'm reading this and it's like the devotion is talking about how your countenance, when you spend time with God, you're instead of having like a disgruntled look on your face, you have a smile on your face. There's a radiance that comes over you. Anyway, so I'm reading all this. Chris has no idea what I'm reading. And he walks in and he's like, you are so beautiful. He said, when you read the Bible, you just glow.
Aww.
And I just started laughing. I'm like, God is so funny reading about how when you spend time with God and you have this radiance. And then he comes in there and that says that. I really laughed. That was funny to
me. That is funny. That's good. I like it.
Anyway.
You do look radiant. And it's just a reflection of your Bible on your face.
Yeah, I told my friends about it and I was like, so when you feel ugly, just read your Bible.
Yeah. Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Leave it on your vanity.
Vanity,
put
vanity.
Put one in your makeup bag.
Yeah.
Well, I know who doesn't look radiant today, and that's me. Because I've been in the garage counting boxes. In black leggings. Why I chose this attire, I'm not sure. Anyways.
Choices.
Enough
it's
about
It's all about
me.
Choices.
Exactly. We're all making choices over here. So let's get into the story. We are talking today about the murder of Lisa Ziegert.
I have not heard of
it. I've never heard of it. Okay. Well, it was around 8:45 in the morning on Thursday, April 16th, 1992, when Sophia Maynard pulled into the parking lot of her morning shift at work. She was a clerk at Brittany's Card and Gift Shop in Agawam, Massachusetts. Mm. She noticed her coworker Lisa Ziegert's car sitting lonely in the parking lot, and she thought, well, that's a little bit weird. You see, Lisa worked 5 to 9 p.m.
Oh.
5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the store, and during the day, she was a teacher's aide at Agawam Middle School. So she should have been at the school at that time. Sophia thought, well, maybe she left something here last night and she's swung by to get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then she remembered that her and Lisa had discussed stuffing some balloons for the display since Easter was coming up. Maybe that's what she was doing here. Maybe she decided to come here before she went to school. Who knows? It was unexpected, but not super alarming. So Sophia went inside the store and hollered out for Lisa. All the lights were on and the overhead music was playing. She went around to the cash register and saw that Lisa's purse and keys and coat were there.
Oh.
And she still hadn't seen Lisa after calling her name a few times. So she got a little nervous. Sophia walked to the back room and found it completely disheveled. Boxes of cards had been knocked over and spilled out. Some of the boxes had been squished. And not having found Lisa there either, she knew something was very wrong at this point. The hairs on her arms stood up and she booked it out of the store, running across the street to a nearby restaurant to call police.
Oh no.
She was like, I am not staying one more second in this store. When police arrived, the store seemed to be tidy enough, but they were very concerned when they inspected the disarray in the back room as described by Sophia. Police found a dent on the back room door where it looked like the door had been kicked with a heel of a shoe.
Oh.
They noted the flattened boxes and could see some blood spatter on a card that had spilled out of one of the boxes. And it became very clear at that point Lisa was in great danger.
Yeah, it just seems like it just keeps getting worse and worse.
I don't know if Sophia saw the blood, but police did. And they're like, okay.
Something
We've
bad
got
happened.
A problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn, Lisa's sister, got a call from a friend and learned that her sister's car and all her things were left behind in the parking lot at her work. The way she explained it in an interview with Dateline was that her friend called her to tell her this. So I don't know if that friend was Sophia or like if she worked nearby and got wind of what was going on. Either way, she was worried enough to get in her car and drive to her mom's work to tell her all about it.
Oh, man.
Well, when she gets there, Lisa's mom had already received a phone call asking if she knew where Lisa was.
Oh.
She replied no and dismissed it. I mean, it was an ordinary Thursday morning. She was busy working and her mind did not register that something was wrong. Like she just, oh no, I haven't seen her. Bye.
Yeah. And she doesn't know who called.
I think it was Sophia who called her mom.
Oh.
I could be wrong. But now that Lynn has showed up and said the words, Lisa's missing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that changes everything for
her.
Lisa's friends went out to look for her. Her boyfriend, Blair, and his best friend, Ed, went out to look for Lisa. Ed remembered how it was cold and pouring rain, but Blair just did not want to stop looking for her. Like, he couldn't bear the thought of doing nothing, like sitting indoors and doing nothing. But despite all the searching, no one found her or any indication of where she was or where she had been. It wasn't until 4 days after Lisa vanished on Easter Sunday that Lisa's loved ones would get the worst news imaginable. A man walking his dog in a wooded area off Route 75 found a woman's body in the woods. Investigators arrived to find a nasty, muddy path leading into the woods where the passerby said that the body was. Remember, there had been that downpour just a couple days before, you know, that day that Lisa's boyfriend was out in the rain looking for her. So right. It was just soggy and muddy and gross.
Oh, man.
Police walked in each other's tracks so that they wouldn't disturb more of the scene than they had to.
Oh, okay. Good thinking.
Yeah. When they got to her, they just knew it was Lisa Ziegert. The clothing Lisa was said to be wearing matched the victim's clothing, but was pulled down, indicating a sexual assault had probably taken place. The charm bracelet worn by the victim, the boots that were still on her feet, they also matched the description provided by Lisa's family to the police. Whatever happened to her was so violent, and for what? There was evidence of a scuffle in the area, finding disturbed earth and buttons from her clothing scattered all around
in
the grass. So it was presumed that she must have been brought here and then killed right here.
Attacked, it seems.
Exactly. Right. This area was really remote. That muddy path leading from the road into the woods wasn't a landmark or anything. I mean, no, someone would have been familiar with this area.
Oh, okay.
Though they didn't have much to go on, police believed whoever did this was a local. Well, the body found in the woods was Lisa Ziegert. She had been stabbed multiple times and she was sexually assaulted. She had defensive wounds on her hands, indicating she was conscious and knew exactly what was happening to her as it was happening.
Oh, Lisa.
And I know we talk a lot about defensive wounds and how it's an indication of life. Like they were still alive at this point in the attack, because we can tell they raised their hands over their face or whatever it was, grabbed the knife. But it also speaks to awareness.
Okay.
And like that instinct to defend themselves because they are aware someone is trying to kill them.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
I know her family doesn't want to remember the terror and the suffering that she must have experienced, but I feel like we should acknowledge it because...
Well, acknowledge that she fought to stay alive. I mean,
she fought to stay alive, and I think to gloss over it would be doing a service to her killer. And a disservice to
her strength.
Yeah, her strength and how hard she fought to survive.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's move on. I just thought it was important to visualize what she went through. Let's move on because now we have to get to Lisa's family.
Okay.
They still needed to be told that their sweet daughter and sister had been found and that she would never be coming home again. Lead investigator Detective Macy drove to Lisa's family home. He told Dateline that he drove faster than he probably should have to get there so that he wouldn't turn around and like pass off this death notification to someone else.
Oh, yeah.
He described how he didn't know what to say. He didn't know how to say it. But as he arrived at the residence, Lisa's mom, Dee, met him at the door and said, "You found her?" And he said, "Yes."
Oh.
And she said, "She's dead, isn't she?" And he said, "Yes." Her mom fell to the floor and sobbed, while Lisa's sister Lynn took to the floor to be next to her mom.
Oh.
I mean, that visual is such a dichotomy, because how strong do you have to be to utter those words about your daughter? Is she dead?
To acknowledge it.
To be the one to say it. Like, it's like she took that burden off of him.
Okay, right.
So for a moment down there on the floor, Lynn, Lisa's sister, shared her mother's pain and brokenness. And then she picked herself up and was like, "Enough of that. I'm going to find out who did this." She just went into like big sister planning mode. Yeah.
I like this family.
I know. So the community was absolutely stunned that such a violent crime would have happened in their sleepy town. Mm. It wasn't like Lisa had this coming, you know? I mean, she hadn't put herself in harm's way where she would have attracted this type of fate. So parents were afraid to let their daughters go to work at night.
Yeah.
Like they were like, I don't want you going to work a night shift.
When you
need to
have
switch to
no
days.
Answers.
Well, exactly. And they didn't even want their daughters walking out to get the mail alone.
No, thank you.
And when word spread about where Lisa was found, they too believed there was probably a killer in their midst, mm-hmm. right there in their town. Lisa's funeral was held at Colonial Funeral Home in Agawam, and over 1,000 people showed up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And well, they of course couldn't all fit in the funeral home. So some of them were standing in the back. Some stood in the foyer, and some even stood out in the rain just to be there for Lisa's family.
Wow.
Afterwards, her body was laid to rest at Springfield Street Cemetery in Agawam. So, you know, if you're ever in the area, go see her and tell her that you heard about what happened to her and she hasn't been forgotten. Lisa Marie Ziegert was born March 24th, 1968, was born and raised in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Her mom described her in an interview with Dateline as having an infectious laugh. Like when Lisa laughed, you laughed.
Oh, I love those people who just have a really good laugh.
I know, a really great laugh. You just could not help but being drawn into her giggle. She was silly. Her mom said that after her death, she came across one of Lisa's poetry assignments from high school. It was more of a rough draft, let's be honest, if you will. She was meant to be writing a poem, but I guess she had writer's block, or maybe she couldn't concentrate because it was like, I can't believe I'm sitting here for an hour. I have accomplished nothing. And it was like a whole page that went on like that. Her rambling thoughts. And I'm sure she eventually pulled off the poem and turned it in and it was great. But I thought that was funny. It just reminded me of me in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Like I just could not.
Like, I don't want to be doing this.
I don't want to be doing this. Like, oh, man. Sometimes when she'd get sidetracked like this, she'd turn to one of her favorite hobbies, drawing. She was quite the talented artist. She drew and painted throughout high school and later in college. And when they found Lisa's keys and her coat and everything in the store that morning, they also found a little doodle like she had been drawing. She played the tenor saxophone and flute in her high school concert band.
Wow, she's so talented.
She was also a drum majorette in the marching band.
What?
And if you're sitting here thinking, is that all, Lisa? No, that's not all, because she also worked for the school newspaper. That big personality that never went unnoticed, really never went unnoticed. Girl. All over the place, because she was involved in so many things at school and in her community. She loved to play music, yes, but she also loved to dance to music. So much so that her friend said, if she was ever driving down the road and her favorite song came on, she would pull over, literally pull over and get out of the car, crank it up and just dance right there.
I love her.
It sounds like she was down to clown.
Oh, yeah. She's so cool.
And I love her for that. After graduating high school, she went off to Westfield State College and got her degree in elementary education. God bless her. We just had Meet the Teacher last night and I was like, you are a saint, my lady.
Yeah. Takes a special person.
I also, you know, the twins were acting a fool. So I was like, just so you know, they're going to be here next year. So if you want to transfer out of here, now's the, like, enjoy your last year here.
A sneak preview.
I mean, a round of applause for all of our preschool and elementary kids, teachers out there. Anyway, Lisa could not wait to be a teacher.
No.
But she had to earn her chops first. When she came back to Agawam to begin her career as a teacher, part of that journey was that she needed to work as a teaching aide before actually getting a classroom of her own.
Oh,
I'm not sure how it is now. I know in England that's really common. Like once you get your degree, you work as a teacher's aide for a while before you become a teacher. Not sure how it is now. It feels like you just get your degree and maybe do a...
I don't know. Maybe while you're going through school, you would have some kind of internship.
Yeah, I don't
know. I don't know. Maybe I can
like
ask
a certain amount of hours. Let's write us.
Well, we can ask Jess.
Yeah,
how about
let's
that?
Ask Jess. So as working as a teacher's aide was not going to pay the bills. So that's why she had the second job at the gift shop at night.
Oh, okay.
She knew this wasn't forever and she was happy to have, you know, the extra hours and she was excited for the future ahead of her. She knew that she was working towards a goal and that excited her. According to her obituary, she also taught Christian doctrine classes at Sacred Heart Church where she went and worked at Perry Lane Summer Camp. It sounds like she was a servant. Like okay. She just lived to serve others, whether it was teaching or, you know, camp counselor, yeah. Because you know, these things didn't pay anything.
Oh no.
Like a camp counselor,
no.
teaching classes at her church. I mean, she wasn't being paid for that stuff.
Right.
She was just passionate and she wanted to help people.
Love it.
There was one more thing to know about Lisa. I mentioned she had a boyfriend, Blair.
Mm-hmm.
She was madly in love. And he loved her right back.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Her boyfriend Blair lived in a house with a few other people, one of which was actually Lisa's sister Lynn.
Oh.
So he lived with a bunch of guys and a couple of girls. So it was a tight-knit group of friends, and the house became sort of a hangout spot for all of them. Lisa spent a lot of time there and was close with all the roommates, but none of them could even say anything about where she was or what happened to her, seeing her, you know, upset or like they just didn't know anything. Agawam had a small police department, but they did have a dedicated team to Lisa's case. They had, you know, the patrol still pulling people over, writing tickets or, you know, parking tickets, but they did have a team of investigators actually devoted to finding out who abducted and murdered Lisa, who had no enemies to speak of.
Right. I mean, we've got to find answers.
We've got to figure this out.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about the secondary crime scene, the gift shop where she worked. There wasn't much to go on there other than she didn't leave the building on her own accord.
Right.
They had an obvious struggle, but there wasn't much physical evidence to point them in any direction. Even though it looked as though the door had been kicked open or kicked, unfortunately, there was no shoe print left behind, only a black scuff and a dent on the door. Now, my source material didn't mention fingerprints or anything like that being taken from the back room that might have given them someone to start with. There was a side door that was adjacent to an alley at the gift shop.
Okay.
So the investigators thought she was probably taken out that door and maybe to a car that was waiting there.
Oh.
Yeah. So winding back the clock, they learned that the day before Lisa went missing, she worked at the middle school for her teaching aide shift and left about 4:30 p.m. She headed straight to the gift shop where she started her evening shift at the gift shop. They know she made it to the gift shop and worked her shift, not just because of the fact that her things were there, because she had a visitor that particular day. Her sister, Lynn, stopped by about 5:30 p.m., just after she had started her shift. And they did, you know, chit-chat, sister-girl talk, nothing in particular. But Lynn ended up leaving around 6 p.m., the last transaction at the register was at 8:20 p.m., confirmed by the register and the customer's receipt who was in there.
Oh, okay.
Who also verified that Lisa helped her at the store.
Okay.
So we know that she was okay at least at 8:20. Then a customer arrived at the store around 9 p.m., and no one greeted her when she walked in.
Oh.
She thought, that's weird. And she heard some thumping in the back room.
Oh, okay.
So she kind of awkwardly waited a second to see if someone was going to come out and like ask her if she needed help. But then she realized that it was 9 p.m. and that whoever was back there was probably doing their closing up duties. Oh. So she just left. Oh, okay. She didn't want to
disturb.
Right, exactly. But what about the primary crime scene where Lisa's body was found? Like I mentioned earlier, it had been raining, and that small dirt path leading to the woods was now a muddy path.
Right.
Which made it really difficult to preserve evidence or even see what was evidence.
What was washed away.
Right, exactly. What was covered up.
Mm-hmm.
But they did their best with what they had to go on, other than Lisa's body and the buttons found strewn around. They did find a tire track.
Oh.
So they took tire impressions from a tire track that was located near Lisa's body.
Very interesting.
Interesting. But something even better that was recovered from Lisa herself.
Oh.
Male DNA.
On her fingernails.
In her body.
And well, that too.
Yeah. Oh, what, you thought you were going to rape this poor woman and not leave anything behind?
Yeah. Come on now.
Nah, that's not how it works.
Nah.
We're talking about the early 90s here. So we're talking about using DNA in direct comparison,
mm-hmm.
right? So police began asking males in Lisa's life to submit a DNA sample, her boyfriend or friends, you know, cousins or what have you, and all those roommates that lived with her boyfriend as well. No one thought it could be Lisa's boyfriend, Blair. No one. Mm-hmm. I mean, he loved her. He adored her. And he was ruled out. DNA didn't match. The police did fixate on another male in Lisa's life, though, Ed Bergotti. Blair's roommate was best friends with Blair.
The guy that went with Blair that night to look for her.
Yes. Okay. And Lisa. He was very close with them. He worked just down the way from the card shop. He worked at his dad's restaurant, EB's. Now, rumors began to filter in that maybe Ed cared for Blair as more than a friend.
Cared for Lisa.
No. Cared for Blair as more than a friend.
Oh, okay.
Like 90s. How dare you?
Okay.
No gayness around here. So there was rumors going around and people were like, maybe Lisa found out and maybe he got rid of her. He also drove a truck that looked suspiciously like the truck reported in the area the night Lisa went missing. Something else that raised an eyebrow was that Ed's dad was a retired detective.
Oh.
And police were saying, you know, Ed's dad still has friends in the police department and, you know, they're covering up his son's involvement.
Oh, no, not one of these.
Listen. This story does not take place in present-day Canton, Massachusetts, so that was a silly notion to think of. Ed was extremely cooperative with police, which actually seemed to fan the flame a little bit because people were like, oh, the police are talking to Ed. Oh, Ed's at the police station again. Oh. So like the more he cooperated with them and was like willing to give them additional statements, the more people thought he was like, involved.
Starting rumors.
Right. Lisa's family was like, that's ridiculous. I mean, just like they thought Blair would never have anything mm-hmm. to do with it. They knew Ed. He cared for Lisa. He cared for Blair. And it was just stupid. He had no involvement and they knew it. He was very close to her family. And they just said, you know what? You're barking up the wrong tree.
Mm.
Besides, Ed was at work that night with tons of witnesses from start to finish. Plenty of people placed him down the street, not abducting or raping anyone. Mm. And lastly, Ed's DNA did not match the slimy, disgusting DNA mm-hmm. found on Lisa's body.
Good.
Oh my gosh, you know in Zootopia where he's like, you got that dinner. Oh, Lord. The DNA ruled out a lot of people, those who were willing to give a sample anyway. So who then?
Okay, who's not willing?
Right. Lisa's friend Kim stopped by the store to see her one night shortly before her abduction and murder. And Lisa told Kim that lately she had been feeling like she was being watched.
Oh, no.
She just had this weird feeling. She's like right now, I feel like someone's watching us. So Kim goes to the front door and like poked her head out and she's like, there's nobody there.
So most of the time when she was working, was she alone?
She was alone most of the time. Maybe they laughed this off. Maybe Kim said, girl, watch your back. Who knows? But Lisa felt something in her spirit. Her spidey senses were tingling. Police were following every single lead until they fizzled out into nothing. Then they would start on a new lead. They followed Ed until his alibi was verified and the DNA didn't match. And they even considered maybe Ed had an accomplice in Lisa's murder. But there was just nothing there. And thankfully, they loosened their grip and let go entirely, you know, which we don't see sometimes in these investigations. They were truth seekers, not how can we close this case?
I can appreciate that.
Tips were trickling in all the time. Detective Macy explained to Dateline how most investigations start off broad, right? And the further you work your way, eliminating people, collecting more evidence and statements from people, you start to filter out the vast majority and it starts to narrow in. But in this case, the more information they got, it seemed like the investigation was getting wider and wider and wider. More possibilities were emerging. More names were being thrown into the ring. Now, with help from Lisa's parents, authorities realized that Lisa's apartment key was actually missing from her key ring.
Oh.
That was a bit of a bombshell because this feels like maybe this was someone who knew Lisa, maybe.
Well, yeah. Why would you only take a key?
Well, and how would you know which key to take?
Right.
So police retrieved the lock from Lisa's apartment door, like actually removed the deadbolt and kept it at the station for when they would question people and say, you know, can I borrow your keys?
Oh, so, wow. This is...
It seems tedious, but like it was really...
You have to think outside the box.
There you go. And it wasn't really panning out for them until they brought this one random guy in. I'm not going to mention his name because spoiler alert, it wasn't him. But listen to this. This guy comes in and they're questioning him. And police had tried hundreds of keys. They had not worked. So they're like, oh, do you mind if I see your keys for a moment? And Jimmy Crackcorn, if his key did not unlock the deadbolt.
But it wasn't him.
So they came back into the room and they're like, what's this key for? And he's like, oh, that's my apartment key.
Oh.
And they're like, what? So they take him to his apartment.
And it opens.
And it opens his door. Turns out his apartment was under the same management that Lisa's apartment building was under. And sometimes they use the same locks. With the same keys.
Oh, interesting.
Hopefully that's a 90s thing.
Yeah, let's
I'm hoping that they've moved away from that practice.
Let's not do that.
In modern day.
I don't like that idea.
Right. So it was another dead end. They checked him out. He wasn't their guy. And I didn't see any reporting about investigators ever finding Lisa's apartment key. Maybe it wasn't nefarious after all. Maybe it was... Maybe she gave her key to her boyfriend so he could have it copied, or maybe just she gave it to him so he could, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe she gave it to someone. I don't know. We didn't hear anything more about that. But by this point, the FBI had created a profile of Lisa's killer. That didn't help. It just seemed like they were, the more breakthroughs they had, the more it just fell flat. Months later, they got another tip from a woman named Joyce Shara. She called and said she believed her estranged husband was involved in Lisa's murder. Yeah. Joyce and her husband, Gary, were going through a contentious divorce and custody battle for their young son. And she said she was scared of her husband.
Oh, no.
She told detectives that every time the news would come on, Gary would turn up the TV. Like, he just had this strange interest in this the news. Case. And, yeah, like, when he would come across reporting of Lisa's case, he would stop. Like, he would stop it there and turn it up.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
He was even flipping through the newspapers. And they thought, yeah, that's a bit odd. Let's talk to Gary. But then they get this call from Gary's divorce attorney saying, Joyce is a nut job.
Oh, no.
Like, just ignore her. He painted Joyce as a depressed alcoholic who would do or say anything to win custody of their son. The attorney went on to tell the police, you know, we're not going to play this game. This is ridiculous. So, you know, Gary is not going to talk to you. While this all seemed weird, it wouldn't be the first time that police got a tip from a scorned woman,
sure.
you know, who was blaming her ex for a murder. Apparently, sure. this is a thing. I mean,
I could imagine how many times this actually happens.
I was thinking that and I thought, as much as I hate some of my ex-boyfriends, like I wouldn't accuse them.
To try to pin them?
To try to pin a murder.
It is crazy.
That's a little bit much. But there was nothing there. Gary didn't know Lisa. Lisa didn't know Gary. There was no connection. Now, a year and a half later, in the fall of 1993, Unsolved Mysteries covered Lisa's murder, surprisingly, again, pointing to Ed Brigati.
What?
Yeah. He had been ruled out through DNA. He had a solid alibi.
Yeah.
But yet, there was no one else to put forth in the episode. The poor guy. So he just had to live with this like black cloud hanging
That's
over his
awful.
Head. And then after the episode aired again, ring-a-ling, it's Joyce Shara again on the phone calling to say, I think I know who did it. It was my ex-husband. And just her saying that wasn't enough. I mean, they'd already been there, done that. She didn't have anything. She didn't have evidence.
Concrete, yeah.
She didn't say, look, I've got this shirt that's got blood on it or anything like that. They were just like, okay, why do you think that? And she's like, I just do, you know.
But they followed every other lead until a dead end.
Yeah, but it didn't. She couldn't give them anything.
Okay, like, this was a dead end.
So this truly, they felt like it was a dead end. And Gary wasn't talking to them because of the divorce. And they just thought, you know what, this is something. They need to work this out
right.
on their own. Now, more and more years passed. And every anniversary of Lisa's murder was marked by a vigil. Her family tried to keep hope alive, you know, periodically making the rounds across the news outlets and pleading with the public, you know, please come forward. It's been X amount of years. Like, tell us what happened to her. Who did this? They were doing everything to honor her and include her in their day-to-day life. And they were giving out scholarships in Lisa's name that were funded by Memorial Golf Tournaments.
Mm.
On Lynn's wedding day, she took what would have been Lisa's bouquet to the cemetery and laid it on her headstone.
Oh.
And this went on for 10 years, Ugh. Lena.
Ugh.
All this campaigning to find Lisa's killer, if you will, began to feel like a job. You know, it just wore at them, but they wouldn't give up.
Wow.
Detective Macy had worked so hard around the clock for 10 years and had given it his all, but the time came for him to retire.
Oh, that had to be a very difficult decision for him.
Yeah, he did not want to pass the torch, but he had to. I mean, he'd been a part of 8 homicide cases in his career, 7 of which had been solved with convictions, except for Lisa's.
Oh, wow.
And it haunted him. Now, a young, fresh set of eyes came into the case in the form of a Detective Fowle. He'd actually been a patrolman at the time of Lisa's murder and was now a detective. So he was familiar with the case. The file had grown a little thicker and dustier over the last 10 years, but he cracked it open and had a gander. Tips were still slowly coming in here and there, and they would follow up, but it led to more dead ends.
Ugh.
Now, a decade turned into 2.
No.
before new technology and science would swoop in and breathe hope and light into the case. Phenotyping had started making the rounds in cold cases. And if you're not familiar with phenotyping, I know we've talked about this in some of our episodes before, but we can gather race, gender, skin color, eye color, just from DNA. We can build a sketch of a person. Yeah. It's amazing.
It really is neat.
State Trooper Pack joined the current detective on the investigation. And though he was a rookie, he had this new idea. Phenotyping. A composite from Parabon Labs. Parabon Labs. Parabon Labs. Go Parabon. So anyway, he had a composite from Parabon Labs.
From where?
It was Parabon Labs. Of the person who they believed killed Lisa, generated from this 25-year-old DNA sample. Nearly 25 years old. And they presented it at a press conference. Now, police didn't recognize the person, you know, this composite, but they were hopeful that the public might. But no one did.
Oh.
Lisa's family didn't recognize him, and the community members were like, who is that? In addition to the composite of the perp at the time of Lisa's murder, they put together an age progression of what the person might look like now.
Okay.
They looked the same.
Oh.
I mean, the only real difference, and I'll post pictures of this, but the only real difference was like the older version, his face was like fuller. So,
no so maybe wrinkles. Maybe he'd
put on a little more weight, maybe a little more wrinkles. This science is groundbreaking, but it only helped in eliminating further the suspect pool that they already had been through. Mm-hmm. So this person had brown eyes and brown hair and was of European descent, which fits a lot of people, but it also rules out a lot of people.
Yeah.
So investigators poured back through the list of names in the file that had refused to provide DNA samples.
Okay, those are the people I'm interested in.
Exactly. So they're like, okay, which of you has this face? So they're looking through. They're not really seeing any resemblances. They were tired of messing around now, though. They thought, you know what? We're just going to have to subpoena the DNA from everybody.
Okay.
Like, come on, screw this. We're not going to wait. And so in August 2017, they got their warrant. It was certainly an aggressive approach. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that they got the authority to do that without any other evidence. But that's amazing. So they began going through these men in groups. As they're making their way through the first group, they recognized some of the names, one of which was Gary Shara.
I knew you were going to say his name.
Yeah, they had interviewed Gary. He had actually talked to them a couple times over the years, once in 2002 and once in 2008. In those interviews, he was really polite. He was relaxed and agreed to talk to them, but he refused to give his DNA. He said he was afraid of cloning.
Oh.
Guys.
Sure.
Nobody wants to clone you. I used to work on a genetic study and people didn't want to participate because they were afraid of cloning. Like, I promise nobody wants to clone you, but
Elon Musk might.
Maybe. Hey, and if you find someone who is willing to clone DNA, I could use some help around here.
Right.
And I could use my help around here. So I would be happy to clone myself. So in these interviews, they were offering Gary water.
Oh.
They thought, you know, we'll have him take a drink of water and then we'll take his abandoned property and we can use that. But he knew what they were doing.
Oh.
He knew what they were doing.
He's smarter than that. Yeah.
He didn't even look at the bottle of water. They asked him again, you know, why would your ex-wife accuse you of such atrocities, like such violence? And he blamed it on the custody battle and drinking. He said she drinks. You know, she just drinks and she She doesn't know what she's saying. So without Gary's consent, without him drinking from the water bottle, they moved on again.
Ugh.
They were still not connecting him to Lisa in any way, shape, or form. So now they have that court order for Gary's DNA. So they skipped over to Gary's house. He wasn't home, but they left word with his roommate, who immediately calls Gary, of course, and says, dude, the police are wanting your DNA sample, something about your DNA.
Yeah.
And Gary was spooked. A couple days later, Gary's girlfriend came to the police station and brought with her three letters that she had found that Gary had left behind, one of which was a confession letter.
Oh?
Yeah. They did not expect that.
Wow. That escalated.
Right. He confessed in full to the crime.
He wrote a letter.
Right. I was going to read some of it, but I thought, no.
Yeah.
Why would I give him this platform?
His thoughts, yeah.
But he called himself a coward. You know, he said that he never really felt normal. And as a kid, he had always fantasized about binding and abducting someone.
Oh, no.
He said he took Lisa from the store that night and never intended to kill her, but things got out of hand. He wrote that he thought of turning himself in for the past 25 years. No, he didn't. But he was a coward.
Mm.
Now that we can agree on. The other two letters were an apology to Lisa's family and a last will and testament saying that it was all going to end today, which sounded like he was planning to take his own life.
Right.
So they quickly tracked him down in Connecticut.
Oh.
Someone found Gary's car in the parking lot of a hospital with a suicide note on the dash.
Oh.
It said, whoever finds my body, I apologize for any psychological trauma incurred. Please call Mass State Police.
How thoughtful.
Isn't that sweet? I mean, what? That he thought of the person who found his body. And he was like, I better apologize. Mm. Anyway, turns out he drove himself to the hospital after taking a bunch of over-the-counter pills because he decided he didn't want to die. And, you know, it's nice that he gets to decide that he doesn't want to die. Lisa didn't. So they collect Gary's toothbrush. They rushed it off to seal the deal. They didn't know how or why he would have done this to Lisa. They still didn't have that connection.
Mm-hmm.
But they believed they had their man. Get this. The lab processed the sample in less than 24 hours.
Ooh.
The next day, they reported the DNA of Gary Shara matched the DNA left on Lisa's body in 1992. I am amazed at how fast they got that turned around.
Immediate hit.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes this takes months to complete. Sometimes it gets backlogged and it could take a year or two.
Yeah.
So they had their man, they had their proof, and Gary was arrested on September 14th.
Mm.
Now, poor Joyce Shara. Turns out she was right all along.
Yeah. And I bet she's not even a drinker.
Well.
Oh.
And sadly, she wasn't there to see this all go down because she died in 2014.
Oh.
She knew Gary was responsible. The day after Lisa's murder, Joyce told her brother and sister that she thought Gary had killed the woman from the news.
Ugh.
She said he was out really late the night before and he came home with all these cuts and scratches on his hands.
Hello? If she told the police that, they should have not stopped.
It was a year and a half later and he didn't have those cuts and scratches on his hands.
Ugh.
So I don't know what she told police, but it wasn't enough for them to do anything. A year and a half
Bless
later.
Bless your heart.
I know. Now, Joyce also was said to have received a music box, which was a carousel style blue horse that would go round and round on the top. Gary told Joyce that he got it from Brittany's card shop.
Oh.
Yes. Except he left out the part where this young, attractive girl sold it to him. He said that this little old lady sold it to him, which no such person worked there at that time.
Wow.
It was never proven to have come from the gift shop that Lisa worked at, but it was just the type of item that would have been sold there.
Hmm.
And that is why investigators think that he saw Lisa and fixated on her.
Oh, okay.
They didn't know each other at all. With news of Gary's arrest, Gary's friends and family were absolutely dumbfounded.
Mm.
They could not believe that they knew a murderer. Many referred to Gary as the guy next door and could not believe he would hurt anyone, let alone violently murder someone and then hide it for 2 decades. He worked normal jobs and no one noticed a thing. One of his friends said, quote, "Nothing inappropriate, nothing darkly suggestive, nothing out of bounds. We've seen Gary in a variety of social situations, in mixed company, in just the guy's company, at the local watering hole. And at no time did we ever catch a whiff of violence or anger towards women. No subtly dark jokes, no misogynistic tendencies," end quote. And this isn't about him, but it just goes to show you that some people are entirely capable of being a chameleon.
Yeah.
To have the stomach to commit such a heinous act and then go on about your business.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't believe for a second he had remorse. I don't believe he thought about turning himself in all the time. I think he thought about doing it again all the time, and somehow he didn't, or maybe he did.
I mean, he talks about growing up, he had these thoughts of doing this to a girl, and he acted on that.
Right.
But all these thoughts of maybe I should turn myself in, exactly. Maybe I should, he never acted on that.
Exactly.
So,
to think how easily he lied to police during these multiple interviews, like so easily, so nonchalant. This is evil in one of its most terrifying forms.
Yeah, it's really frightening to know that these people walk among us.
Some people are so normal that we don't even bat an eyelash.
Right. No, but there are times I look at people and I'm like, what's behind you?
What's going on in there? Exactly. Well, as they often do, Gary pleaded not guilty.
Mm-hmm. After writing a confession letter.
Police were like, really, dude? We've got everything to nail your booty to the flow.
Yeah, come on.
You're going to plead not guilty. We've got your confession letter. We've got your DNA. All right. If you want to go, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So they were prepared to go to trial, and we know they had the jump because we know they had enough evidence to bring those charges against him and substantiate the evidence for a jury to see very clearly what everyone else saw. And they were prepared to air out some of the dirty darkness that the detectives had unearthed during the investigation, like Joyce's statement from years gone by, and the knife-related sexual violence that was of particular interest to Gary. So they were ready. They're like, you know, you want people to see how gross you are? Let's go. Luckily, in this case, though, there wouldn't be a trial because Gary came to his senses.
Oh, okay.
He changed his plea to guilty. I think because this case was so cold for so long, and justice was so prolonged, it was good for her family to be able to finally move on without rehashing everything at trial.
Oh, yeah.
He confidently admitted to killing Lisa with her family sitting right there in the court watching. He never explained what happened that night. Like, why did he go there? Why did he choose her? Did he pick her at random? Did he buy that music box and that's when he saw her?
I'm sorry, but when you plead guilty to these things, you should...
Right.
The family should be able to question you.
Yeah. I like that.
I mean...
New rule.
Yeah. Who do we need to call?
Now, Lisa's mom, Dee, spoke at Gary's sentencing. Ed Brigati was right there by Lisa's family's side, like he had been all those years that he walked with a black cloud hovering over his head. Lisa's dad, David, spoke at Gary's sentencing, and he put it perfectly. He said, quote, "This is a difficult thing to do. It reopens wounds that were somewhat closed and irritates wounds that will never close," end quote. Mm. I thought that was such an accurate representation of the lasting implications of trauma that victims' families live with.
Yeah.
Her mom said that Lisa's life was a blessing.
Aww.
And her sister Lynn's statement was her, quote, "attempt to share how the atrocious things that were done to her have affected me. Mm. I lost my sister less than 1 month after her 24th birthday. No warning, no preparation, just a shaky call at work early on a Thursday morning." You know, we don't get a courtesy call.
No.
That we're about to lose someone, that our life's about to blow up. Sometimes we're lucky enough, you know, I say lucky enough, but sometimes one of our loved ones is ill, mm-hmm. and we get that time with them. But they didn't get to say goodbye to Lisa.
Yeah.
Her family wants her to be remembered for her smile and for the love and joy that she exuded on this earth, not how she was taken. The love she had for children, the love she had for her family and her boyfriend, and the way she'd pull the car over on the side of the road because she just had to get the wiggles out. Like, she could not contain her own joy. I know life can be hard, but I hope that we can all find the joy in something today.
Yes.
And let's do it for Lisa.
Oh.
Maybe crank up a song and dance in the parking lot.
I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it.
People are going to look at you weird, but you're going to go, "I don't care." Because Lisa didn't care.
Yeah.
That's all I got for you.
Oh. Well, I think you you told her story, Lisa's personality, her character. I think you told it beautifully. It's always the good ones.
It's always the good ones. I just can't. 2 decades, Lena. He proceeded to just tuck that away and carry on. It's shocking
and
to me.
Yeah, we've talked about so many other cases where the killer is hiding in plain sight. I mean, he was right there.
He worked at a restaurant. He was a manager at a restaurant. Just, you know, he worked as like a shuttle driver at one point. Just these normal run-of-the-mill jobs that he would just interact with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's just strange. And here's something I thought of. Mm-hmm. Police couldn't figure out why Lisa. Well, if you look at Lisa's picture and you look at Joyce's picture, they kind of favor each other.
Okay.
Kind of. They both have dark hair, big 80s, early 90s dark hair. So maybe he saw her and thought he was going to kill two birds with one stone. He was going to fulfill his abduction fantasy and take out all his rage that he had on his wife. Who knows?
That's a very good point. But also, this was such an easy opportunity for him. Her being at the store by herself.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was planned. Yeah. I mean, it was totally planned.
Yeah.
He knew exactly where to go, park his car. He knew exactly where he was going to take her.
Yeah.
It was all thought out. And the fact that he had it planned so well, and then he just went on with his life.
Yeah.
What other crimes did he commit before and after this?
Well, that's what I'm sitting here thinking. Like, what else has he done that we don't know and we will never know?
Right. Yeah.
Well, May we learn from Lisa and be more like her and enjoy life. Yeah. It sounds like she just enjoyed life.
Eat some Chick-fil-A, drink some sweet tea, go get some sun on your face.
Dance, learn to play some...
Stop complaining about the heat, Candace.
I'm tired of it.
Find the joy.
Yes.
Go splash in the pool and be like, summertime. Aww. Yeah. That's what I should be thinking about.
Oh.
Enjoying the summer.
Yeah.
What's left of it.
What's left of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not much longer.
I know.
You really will get those cooler temperatures. Oh, well, thank you for telling us about Lisa. And this was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. See you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.